I just went and showed him the piece of paper. Can
you give me the... Hey, you're not even going to pick up my stool? Pick up my stool, Brian. All
right, here we go.
Hey, everybody, Brian Cullen.
What the hell was that?
I was trying something different.
Yeah, don't do anything different.
Hey everybody, Brian Collins here with another exciting episode of the Pixel Hub Podcast. Let's check in with my co-host Dan Lefebvre. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great. Really excited.
I'm excited too. We've got on the show a VFX supervisor from Fuse FX, John Massey. And John's worked on a lot of really cool shows, VFX heavy shows.
Yeah, Turn, Washington Spies on AMC, one of my favorite shows right now.
Right.
He's working on that and worked on a lot of other shows, True Blood and Black Sails and Hemlock Grove.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to talk to him and get to learn more about those shows.
Yeah, you know, with the sort of golden age of television coming on, we see a lot of bigger productions, a lot of heavier, VFX heavier television series, and John's one of those supervisors who's right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Like you said, he's got a lot of experience, and we wanted to get him on the show to see how, you know, his day-to-day work differs from something like a VFX supervisor on a feature film.
Yeah, that's something I'm really excited about, too, because it's something you don't really hear too much about, you know, day-to-day, what does a VFX supervisor do, or what, you know, what do you do when you're on set, or that kind of thing. So hopefully we'll be able to get some of that information out of him. And
Like scheduling. Dig more.
Yeah, like, you know, just what do you do? Because if you're interested in becoming a VFX supervisor or you're interested in this industry at all, it's really good information to know what they do, right?
Right.
And it you just don't help. Hear it that much. And so I'm really excited and hopefully that we can get some of that information from them.
Yeah, me too. Well, let's go ahead and talk to John. We'll get on with it. But first, a word from our sponsors. As any motion capture actor will tell you, working on a green screen set all day long can be grueling work. Whether you're swinging from a tree like a 500-pound gorilla or power sliding past strafing bullet fire, motion capture can be a real wear and tear on your equipment. It's at these moments when accuracy matters the most, and missing or hanging mocap balls just aren't an option.
That's why the pros only choose the best ping pong ball adhesive around. Magic Mike's mocap ball glue is an industrial strength chemical adherent made from a combination of black rhino tusk and 100% American bald eagle claw. Magic Mike's ball glue gives you the confidence and peace of mind you'll need to make those flesh-eating velociraptors come to life.
Stick to Magic Mike's glue, and your balls will stick to you. Well, John, thanks for coming on the Pixel Hub Podcast, man. We really appreciate it. We thought we'd start with asking you about, you know, Fuse FX and what it is that you do there.
Okay. Yeah, great. Great for having me on the show. And I'm the visual effects supervisor here at Fuse FX. So I'm, you know, an on-set supervisor as well as an in-house supervisor. And, you know, sometimes those roles are the same, depending on the type of show. And mostly Fuse FX, we do episodic television, although we do some feature work. But, you know, there is sometimes a delineation between, you know, being an on-set supervisor and being an in-house supervisor. And right now I'm on staff here. So if you're an episodic show and you call up and you say we have a TV pilot or we have a show that we need a supervisor for, you know, then sometimes they'll assign a supervisor from the pool of in-house supervisors to be the show supervisor. But many shows will come, you know, they have a supervisor will be hired by the show. Then they will come to different facilities and either choose a facility or, you know, nowadays a lot of the larger shows are, you know, using sort of the feature model, which is sort of, you know, mixing it up between different, you know, sparsing it out into different facilities, and each facility will have their own in-house supervisor.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about the distinction between an in-house and on-set supervisor? And are those roles usually taken on like at once by one person, or are usually in-house for an entire show and then on-set for an entire show?
Well, it's it can be depending on the size of the show. You know, right now we're working on Turn, Washington Spies, which is an AMC show. And they shoot in Virginia, in Richmond, Virginia. And the on-set supervisor, who is also the general show supervisor, is Terry Wendell. And he was hired by the show, hired by AMC. And they came to us, and they were looking for a facility to do pretty much the entirety of the show. And so they assigned myself. I mean, I knew Terry from another company, and they assigned me for the show. And really, the difference, as far as the skill set is, an in-house supervisor, you are more of, working with the individual artists, working on the, you sort of work on the post end of it. And, sometimes it's very hard if you are sort of an on-set supervisor to also, since on an episodic schedule, you are, working on a show while you're shooting. It's very hard to be an on-set supervisor and also be supervising the show, back at the shop or, wherever. So.
And so how much of the previs do you guys do as far as like, are you able to render in real time on set to give the actors, directors, whoever, a better idea of what it's going to look like?
Well, there is a thing which is, utilizing if you're shooting on a green screen stage, there is some real time playback systems that you can use where you can pre-build models or set extensions and plug them into that it basically is giving a real time playback for the camera. But really, those systems, at a previous facility I worked at, they used them on Once Upon a Time, but very rarely. Most episodic shows don't really require that kind of real time feedback. And you're also on an episodic schedule. You don't have the sort of the leisurely pace of being able to shoot, one scene or half a page a day, like on a feature. So a lot of the episodic shows, you'll be shooting 10 pages a day, and it's just a lot of go, go, go. So, a green screen shoot is, kind of a, you're still maybe only getting one shot here and one shot there. And so it can be pretty fast paced. So there's very little time for doing some of the bigger, the sort of the larger scale CG sets. A lot of that's really changing, and it really just depends on the nature of the show. On Turn, there really isn't any of that, that's that involved doing huge green screen sets. There are a few scenes that, require some exterior green screen. I mean, there's a, Terry said it might be the largest green screen on the East Coast, and it was the back of a warehouse for the Valley Forge set extension that we did. And it's 400 feet long or something like that, and 40 feet high. So it's just a giant green screen on the back of the stages that they have there.
Now, does Fuse, do they go and find these warehouses and studios for shooting, or is that contracted out to somebody else?
That is completely on the production end.
Okay.
There's really, the only stuff that's sort of on a visual effects level that you really go out and start looking for or in shooting and production end is when you start shooting elements, being able to... if all of a sudden you need some blood shot or, you're doing you need some smoke elements, this sort of, a lot of times you can just say, well, if you can get it on the production side, great. If not, then, we can get it. Nowadays, you can get a Blackmagic camera and go and, find a warehouse and shoot at yourself, and you know, or you know, I was joking with somebody today about, you know, well, let's just shoot, we need some fire elements, let's just shoot in my driveway. And it's like, well, that doesn't sound sounds a little dangerous, you know, but we've done it where you know, you're in the back of the parking lot with some hairspray and aluminum foil, and so there's a little bit of rubber band technology there.
Is that an onset supervisor duty or an in-house?
That is just, you know, that's a little bit of both. You
know, it's so. Guerrilla VFX, yeah. It sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you see this a lot of times, you know, on the internet. You'll see a lot of shows that, or a lot of people doing their sort of their home visual effects type stuff. And some of it you can laugh at, and other times, like, you know what, we've done the same type of stuff, you know. I worked on True Blood for 7 years, and we did a lot of different blood effects. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of times we're just, you know, we're shooting blood against a wall for an element, or doing these blood balloons, and you just start thinking to yourself, you know, somebody is paying me to do this. You know, this would be stuff that, you know, you get to work with a special effects coordinator, and you're blowing up, you know, blowing up stuff that you then will composite into an element or into a shot. And, you know, there's that moment where you're like, really, I'm getting paid to do this. This is what I would do, you know, as a teenager. I, you know, would set up army men and, you know, just light them on fire or make Molotov cocktails. And you're like, okay, well, this is, you know, it's the perfect, you know, when you're working in the film industry, that's, you know, that's sort of, you know, if you can love what you do, and that's sort of fallen into that. So,
speaking of, you know, going back to when you were a kid, when did you know that you wanted to get in this business?
Well, I have to say, I was an intern on a film and in high school, and it was a production. It was a feature, low budget independent feature that came into our school. And I went to a school in Atlanta called the Northside School of Performing Arts, and they came in. They were looking for interns for a film they were shooting that summer. And so I interned with the sound crew. And I think when we were, like I said, we were blowing up cars at 4 o'clock in the morning and shutting down streets. And I just said, I got to do this for the rest of my life. I don't care what aspect of it, you know, but because I came to visual effects sort of from the camera side. And I was a camera assistant for a long time, and made a short film, my late 20s, and realized that I knew nothing about post. You know, it's like, as a camera assistant, you put the film in the can, and you tape it up and you ship it out, and that's it. You know, that's all you sort of hear about. You know, you learn a lot in college, and it's not that I didn't ever edit anything, but in just the process of it. So I started working in a post facility that did visual effects. And so that then, you know, I sort of, you know, kind of just dropped into, you know, the role of a visual effects producer, just because of my knowledge, and then you know, became a visual effects supervisor in this sort of roundabout way, because they needed, the company I was working for, they needed somebody to go to set, and I had quite a bit of set experience. Mm-hmm. So that's where I sort of that's sort of how I kind of dropped into becoming a visual effects supervisor.
Nice. Yeah, we need something blown up. Send John in, right?
Yeah, you know, those are the moments that, you know, when you're sort of on set or as an on-set supervisor, you know, you would mark out a day as a visual effects day, which is you would shoot all the elements, or you would get the actors, and you'd get to, you know, tell them how to move, or you'd work with the stunt coordinator and be like, well, I need them to do this. And, you know, those are the fun days where you sort of, you kind of get your name on the chair, you know, so to speak. You get to, you get to play director, but, those are the fun moments. You know, there's the daily grind, where you're doing monitor comps and, you know, just the usual cleanup stuff. But, you know, the big shoot days are really fun.
Yeah. You've been in this business long enough, you know, you've seen the movement from practical effects to special effects. How did you, how was that changeover for you? Did you enjoy it? Do you still enjoy it? Or do you wish for the old days of blowing up things?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you work with a lot of special effects coordinators and, you know, that's why in the Academy or the Emmys, it's the special visual effects category, and you include the special effects coordinator in almost every, you know, category that you do, as long as that person is a real role in that. And, you know, I think that they're saying to me like, well, you know, we're going to be out of business soon. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is that, you know, as much as CG can do fire and water and, you know, it's that interactivity, that believability and that I think sometimes, you know, gets lost in on production because they think, well, we'll just let visual effects take care of it. But I'm a firm believer in, like, if you can shoot it practically, mm-hmm. do it. And the, you know, and I think one of the things that has really been lost is, you know, model building. And I think there's, you know, I know that Christopher Nolan has done a lot of really great stuff with that. And, you know, I've worked with a few visual effects supervisors that came from that model building background. And I think, you know, that stuff is, you know, really a lost art form. So, you know, it definitely has changed. I mean, even when I got in this business, you know, the CG was, you know, it took you days to render something. And it was, you know, you just said, well, forget it. We'll just shoot it ourselves because I'm not going to wait for an element. And there's a little bit of that still now. But we certainly always recommend if you can get it in camera, if you can shoot it practical, you know, that's the best way. And it will look the best.
Yeah, I'm curious. You're working on Turn right now, which is a great show. I really have enjoyed it so far. Do you find that for period shows like that, is it more difficult than something like True Blood that's very
contemporary,
yeah. Very fantasy? It's still very real world, you know, set in a real world type place, but it's not a period piece. Do you find one is more difficult than the other?
Well, it's funny because, you know, there is that sense of like, well, it's a sense of reality. There's historical accuracy that you have to, have to take care of where it's you're doing some research that, you know, it's like, well, is this because you're also, you know, we're finding elements of buildings and, you know, CG ships, and they'll find a ship. It's like, oh, well, that ship wasn't built until 1805. So we can't use that. And, you know, and so there's a real challenge to making something look real. And especially when you want to look at New York City, it's, what looks real, but also what looks interesting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're still sort of trying to make something that compositionally looks really nice. And then on True Blood, on the other end, it's like, well, what is, you know, the magic elements? It's like, well, what is that supposed to look like? Well, you know, and the director will turn to you and say, well, I don't know. You tell me. And, you know, it's like we worked on Angel. I worked on Angel for a few seasons, and there was always this thing of what a Hellmouth looked like. And it was just one of those things where you would try different things. You'd come up with you know, art concepts, you would do some conceptual design for it. And then, you know, but in the end, there really is, you know, who knows what this looks like, what's going to look the most interesting, but also what sort of tells the story, you know. And they each one presents its own challenges. I do enjoy doing the period pieces just as far as, you know, the set extensions and, you know, just really sort of sinking into the historical bit of it, because there's, you know, it's spent a lot of time looking at that stuff, and you end up learning, you know, quite a few things. Like on Turn, we did some research as far as the British ship's flags, and you know, the previous there were some other shows that they show the British fleet in the bay, and they had the blue ensign flag, which is the fleet flag. And, you know, we were started going with that, and I said, well, let's just do some research to make sure we get the flags right, because there were some issues with it in the season before we came in on season two. And it turns out that I've discovered that the North American Fleet British flag was the red ensign, you know, with the Union Jack in the upper corner. And it turns out that that was the precursor to the American flag. And that's why we have white stripes on a red field and Australia has the stars on a blue field. Is that the blue ensign flag was for the, I think, the South Pacific Fleet. So, you know, it's those sort of things that as you're working on, you're like, oh, you know, that, and that wasn't something that production came to us or nobody told us that, you know, that, oh, you have to make sure this is correct.
Right.
So, you know, as part of the visual effects supervisor, that's your job, is to make sure that everything that's going on that image, you know, has been sort of vetted, and, you know, leaving it to somebody else, you know, the editors don't have time to look at it. And even sometimes the directors or the show producers aren't going to have time to catch that and say, oh, are those flags correct? You know, that's not what they're looking at. So, you know, those sort of things on the historical side are really a lot of fun. And, you know, you get to sort of go to school a little bit.
You learn a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious on the period side, when you're talking about that ship, you know, being in the 1800s or even the flag, do you get a little bit more time to do R&D to make sure things like that are correct? Or, you know, working on an episodic schedule, you're saying you have to, you know, sometimes shoot 10 pages a day. There's not going to be that much time to be able to do that research to really dig in and make sure that things are accurate that way. Is there some leeway there?
Yeah, so certainly they'll catch those things in the concept meetings or when they're doing the outline and say, well, this is coming down the pipe. You know, here's we're going to have this big shot, and you know, this is what's going to be needed. So usually there's a little bit of time to sort of get all those sort of ducks in a row before you get into the production schedule or into the post schedule. And one of the challenges is that once they get it in the edit and they deliver that locked cut and they said, okay, well now you've got 2 weeks. So a lot of times you have to make sure you have all that stuff ready, because a lot of times 2 weeks is not really enough time to sort of put something like that together. And but certainly on the one great thing about some of the cable shows is that they will give you a lot of time up front, because I mean, we're working on some Amazon shows now that, you know, this new thing of airing all of the episodes all at once means that they have to start a year before. And they want to make sure that they go through the show, you know, pretty well, and make sure before everything is uploaded, basically. And Netflix does the same thing as well. And HBO, you certainly Game of Thrones and True Blood, those shows, they give you a lot of time up front to really sort of, certainly shows like Game of Thrones, and Black Sails is another show that we're also working on that's at least the sense to say, you know, we need to give visual effects enough time to do this if you want it done right.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. You know, that's a really interesting distinction you've made between the two types of VFX shows or shows in general, that one that's a historic period and one that's more fantasy, right? And how what you just described, this R&D process, is very meticulous and you learn a lot of things. That's very, very different from the director going, I don't know what it looks like. You're supposed to tell me, right? So, I mean, I can see where certain personalities in a VFX supervisor might be more suited to one or the other of those. Is that true? Does that exist? Are there VFX supervisors or producers who sort of are not pigeonholed, but kind of specialize in, that have a preference, or that the studios go, well, they did well on this, and so they're good at fantasy, so let's call John up or whoever.
Yeah, I don't think there is a generalization as far as genres. You know, like you're sort of, you know, you're doing really well. I mean, I seem to have gotten I did a Civil War pilot for Amazon when I first came to Fuse, that was called Point of Honor. And then step right into Turn Washington Spies, which is a Revolutionary War, mm-hmm. and then did just finished a show for PBS called Mercy Street, which is a Civil War, you know. So I seem to be doing, and then I'm also was the in-house supervisor here for Black Sails, even though we weren't doing that much. But, you know, so certainly there was a little bit of a step to say, okay, well, you know, you're dealing with these same ships and the same issues, you know, the water, mm-hmm. the historical buildings, you know, and it, as it turns out, three of those shows all shot in Petersburg, Virginia. So when I was there for Point of Honor, you know, I did a huge photo shoot of the whole location. So, you know, I found myself going back to all of those photos on other shows that, you know, are in that same location. It's like, oh, well, I have a shot of that building. So mm-hmm. already. So there's that, a lot of times there's that sort of lead in to mm-hmm. it. And certainly if you saw, you know, John Adams and you said, okay, well, mm-hmm. I'm making a show like John Adams, who did that? You
right.
know? And then you mm-hmm. might want to, but I think generally it's, you know, who you trust, who you've worked with before, you know, before going into that. I think as far as on set and in-house, there certainly is, you know, there are many supervisors who really just only do on set. You know, they've worked at a facility, but now they want to be freelance. And, you know, in being freelance, you generally are only like on set supervising. And then there are, you know, more people who come from, you know, maybe they were a lead compositor or a lead CG supervisor, and then now they're an in-house supervisor, and their skills are really sort of geared towards being more technical, you know, or even also artistic, that they only want to be in-house, or they, you know, mm-hmm. I know quite a few, you know, people who I've sent out to set on, you know, to cover set, that just come back and say, you know what, I don't really want to go to set. You know, there's a lot of politics in dealing with, you know, you have to deal with the egos, and you have to deal with the director, mm-hmm. and you know, there's also a lot of waiting around. You know, there's a mm-hmm. lot of sort of, you know, you're asked to come in at the beginning of the shoot for the rehearsal, and then, but they're not going to shoot your visual effects shot until the end of the day, mm-hmm. you know, after 12 hours. So, and sometimes they don't know that. They want you to, oh, we might shoot it at lunch. Well, we might shoot it in an hour. So you're just, you end up spending 12 hours on set, which for a lot of people, you know, if you don't have internet access, can be really, really, really frustrating, you know? So, but, you know, so I think there is some, you know, delineation between those, but, you know, certainly myself, I was mostly an on-set supervisor, mostly because I come from being a visual effects producer, and also because of my camera assisting background. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now at Fused, I found that a lot of shows that aren't shooting in LA anymore. And, you know, and there's a lot of, they had a real need for somebody in-house here. So I find myself doing more in-house supervision now. And, you know, both have their benefits and their challenges. And, you know, I wouldn't say one is better than the other. And certainly I think on features, a lot of supervisors will, they cover the set, and then when they're done shooting, then they go into post. But on an episodic schedule, that's really not usually possible.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm curious, when you're talking about being on set and waiting around, what do you do in that time while you're waiting around? Are you able to work on other shots? Or, I mean,
blow stuff up.
Well, I mean, just kind of from my, but yeah, from my own perspective, like if I were just sitting there, like I'd want to get something done. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be able to do something, you know, mm-hmm. rather than just sitting around. But it sounds like maybe
mostly you just hang out and talk to the makeup ladies and, and go to craft service.
There you go.
Get some. Eat too many peanut M&Ms,
makeup ladies.
That's that. You know, that's you know, I you know, as the supervisor, you're not necessarily working on shots when you're on set. So there isn't sort of this, you know, okay, well, I'm going to be doing a shot while I'm supervising. Mm-hmm. You know, you really kind of have to be on call. You also have to pay attention. That's the other, you know, because a lot of times it'll be a scene or a sequence, and they will start shooting something that should be, you know, you should, they should notify you, and they don't, and you say, oh, you know what, you're, this really should be a visual effect shot because you're actually seeing the building that we're blowing up or something like that. And, you know, so a lot of times that, you know, you have to really sort of pay attention. You have to, you know, be behind the monitor, watch what they're doing, you know, because they also will, you know, not call you an hour before. They might just say, oh, you know what, we're going to do this shot now. You know, where's John? Where's, you know, and if you're sort of, you know, you have driven off to Starbucks or something like that, you know, they might be rushing back to set. So, you know, and mostly you are still working or maybe making phone calls and, you know, planning the next, you know, doing script breakdowns, you know, planning the next shot or also reviewing shots. You know, when I was on True Blood, a lot of times, you know, I could still, you know, they could post shots up for me to review. And, you know, so there's a lot of, especially when you do have Wi-Fi, you know, you do have internet access. But a lot of times when you're out in the woods or, you know, in the mountains somewhere shooting, you know, you don't really have that time. And, you know, sometimes you just got to bring a book.
Well, let's talk about what you, like when they say, hey, John, stop talking to the makeup lady. Come over here. We're about to shoot this. Walk us through what you do. All right. You're at the, you know which shot you're doing.
Well, you know, hopefully you have planned it ahead of time. You know, there's a lot of shots that come up that you haven't planned. But when you're, let's say, you know, if you're doing a green screen shot, you know, where the grips, you have to make sure that you've already spoken to the grips about whether you're going to use chroma key green or digi green. What size is the green screen? You know, so all there's a lot of pre-planning and. Right. So they say, okay, well, we're going to do your green screen shot now. So, okay, well, where does the green screen go? What lens are you on? Do you need tracking markers? You know, what is the, is it a moving shot? Is it a lock off? And a lot of times, you know, as a supervisor, you know, this is where knowing the camera, knowing the lenses, you know, knowing the grip gear, you know, they all come in really handy because you're sort of, a lot of times they will just, even the director will turn it over to you and say, okay, well, this is your shot now. Yeah. You know, and you don't get to direct the actors, but you are sort of directing where the camera goes sometimes and, you know, what lens it would be best and whether you're matching another lens that you had to do. And a lot of times you'll do shots that will, you know, match a certain angle or match a certain lens, and you have to come back to that setup and do that. So, and, you know, a lot of times you're also doing lineups, you know, we'd have a video assist that you are working with, that he has a video mixer that you can look at an AB over if you're matching something. So, you know, when they say your shot's up, there's a little bit of, you know, hopefully you've done your pre-planning and everything is just ready to be set up. And then, you know, when they are shooting, it is recording all the data, which is, you know, sometimes you will have a data manager if it's a big show. Mm-hmm. And many times it's just you recording the camera information and whether you need the lens, the height, the angle, all the different data, and being able to save and access that data later when you get back into post-production is very important, because that is, you know, if the artist gets to his shot and he really needs the camera information and he looks at you and it's like, well, did you get the camera information? It's like, you know, that was your only job, you know, after you've done the shot, your only other job was to make sure you got the camera information, you know, then you've kind of failed a little bit. But, you know, it happens. Sometimes you don't get the right camera information. Sometimes they have shot something without you and they didn't record the camera information. Mm-hmm. You know, the camera assistants are your, you know, best friends. You ask them, like, you know, and usually, and as a camera assistant, we always recorded the lens information because the DP may come back and say, you know, what was that lens we shot this on, you know, 6 days ago? Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a camera assistant, if you don't have that camera log, you know, then you're in trouble because that's information that they want to have. So usually you will have it somewhere and it's in or the camera reports. But, you know, a lot of times that information gets lost or they forgot as well. So, you know, after you acquire the data, you know, then it's either entered into the pipeline back at the facility, or you've uploaded it and it's, you know, or saved it on a file or something. And then you come, because you don't also don't come back to that information sometimes until, you know, 3 months later. So it's not like something that is, you know, that, that shot then goes to editorial and is processed and, you know, or put in the edit. And then it's not until they lock the cut 3 months later that you have that, you know, that it comes up to the compositor. And that's when they, you know, you have to remind yourself, well, what did we do that day? How many takes did we shoot? Was there, did we shoot a clean plate or did we not? And so there's a lot of little minutia that kind of goes on with that. And it gets a little hectic when you're shooting multiple cameras and, you know, one camera is, you know, 200 yards away and you have to go around to get all the camera information. But that's when the camera assistants are your best friends and the script supervisor. And, you know, they help you coordinate getting any information that, that you might need, especially the lens, the angle of the camera, the height of the camera. So you have a lot of help just within the production. And I think as a supervisor, you know, the people you need to befriend and make sure you don't piss off are the camera assistants and the grips and the special effects coordinator, you know, because there's, it's, you know, it's a, it's, there's a lot of negotiating going on, you know, on a film set.
Yeah. I'm curious, and correct me if I'm wrong, but on Turn, you're not the on-set supervisor. Correct.
Correct. Yeah. Turn is Terry Wendell is the show's, and he's the show supervisor. So, you know, he's not just sort of the, he wasn't hired by Fuse. He brought the show to Fuse. So he has a lot of say in the look of the show and what the, you know, and he works with the production designer as far as, you know, sort of what the, what New York was, you know, because New York was a Dutch colony. So, there's a lot of Dutch buildings that were destroyed, you know, in the fires that they had that people don't realize what, like when they think of like, what does New York look like in the 18th century? It looked like, you know, they're, in their mind, they're thinking, you know, Gangs of New York or something. Yeah, but even before that, it was very much a, you know, a Dutch colony. There were Dutch buildings and, you know, we looked for a lot of references for this style and, you know, really found it. And there's a Dutch quarter in Potsdam, Germany, that we, used a lot of photo references from, but a lot of that, you know, so Terry has a lot of say in that, you know, sort of what that look is. And, you know, we would, he's also, an artist and in his own right. So we would send him sort of a, we would key the green out and send him an image back, that was just blank white behind where things needed to go. And he would just sort of sketch in, let's put the boats here. You know, let's put New York here and the waterline here. And, you know, so those sort of things, you know, he'll give us sort of a lead on, but also he will also leave it up to us. And, you know, because he's busy on set, he's shooting all the elements that we'll get a plate back and I'll say, well, how about we, you know, use the buildings, these buildings here and, you know, add a little bit more trees over here and send it back to him. So there's a lot of, collaboration on it. And, you know, there's not really one person, you know, leading everything, but, and it's also a lot of collaboration with the production designer. I think, you know, a lot of, as a visual effects supervisor, you know, you're sort of, you're given a blank screen, but that blank screen has to go with the show of everything else, you know, and that's, the production designer has a lot of say in, you know, what the look of that is. And so you have to make sure that you coordinate with them about that. You're not sort of, you know, going off on your own, you know, it's like making your own show. And, you know, like, yeah. I put all my friends in here. You know?
So you kind of work on both sides, being on set as well as not on set. Do you find it's difficult when, for example, with Turn, where you're not on set there, where you can't remember what was shot on a particular day. You can't kind of, you can go back to the data perhaps, but not in your memory, remembering that, oh, this was shot, I remember this particular time or what happened here on set.
Yeah, you mean as far as an in-house supervisor?
Yeah.
I always try to watch the dailies. I get signed up on their dailies, because all of the show, all the producers, they get dailies every day sent to them, over the internet. And so I'll try and watch the dailies so that even if there's something that Terry doesn't catch, I can, or even if he's sending me his notes, I can watch, oh, okay, I see that you shot that way. Mm-hmm. And, so there's a, there are a lot of challenges with not being able to go down to set. And, we're working on a show now for Amazon where, there were some issues, and it's maybe not how I would have shot it. It's how, somebody that was hired as just a set supervisor, shot it, and they tried to do their best. And, sometimes you don't know that, because of the time constraints on production, you're not able to shoot a clean plate, or you're not able to, get all the elements you need, or there's just something you just have to let go. Those are challenges that when you're back in the shop, you can be, cursing them and saying, well, why'd they shoot it like that? And you weren't on set.
Yeah.
You don't really know. And I think that's why, I suggest to many, compositors or comp supervisors or CG supervisors to go to set and see what the challenges are, because, I think a few of them on True Blood, who I would have them come and cover me on set or cover a second unit, they would learn. They're like, oh, now I see why you couldn't get me a clean plate, because the AD is yelling at me to hurry up or say, so you've got to shoot your elements, and well, you've got 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Can you shoot it in 2 minutes? Wow. And so that kind of non-leisurely pace can get really hectic, and it can get stressful because, I remember when the first days I worked on True Blood, and I, went up to Anna Paquin, and I had to say something about how is this the burning on the skin of Bill Moyer, Stephen Moyer gonna, Bill, the character of Stephen Moyer, is going to happen. And she just looked at me, and I'm having to give her direction, and she just looks right at the director like, who is this guy? why is he telling me what to do? And she'll just look at him, and I'm like, yeah, you're right. I'm just going to keep my mouth shut here, just do whatever you want. So there's those moments that the pressure of it, can really kind of get pretty crazy. You just have to breathe and say, okay, it's all going to work out, But so that's, those are just some of the challenges that, and I think it's why a lot of people opt out of going, being set supervisors or, rather be a set supervisor or be an in-house supervisor or find being a compositing supervisor.
Hmm. Well, we're certainly not going to ask who is this guy, because you've given us a great description of what it is you do, and it sounds like a lot of fun. We appreciate you coming on, John, and telling us about, what it is you do, but these great stories that you have,
absolutely. Enjoy. It's great to be on the show, and I've been listening to some of your other podcasts, and it's a really great plethora of just different talents, and there's sort of a lot to learn from other people, and that's another thing about being a visual effects supervisor is you really do need to pay attention to, production designer, or even, a game designer will have some, they have some tricks up their sleeve. Mm-hmm. And so you're sort of gathering from all different resources and architecture and things like that. So I think you guys are doing a great job just sort of covering all the different aspects of visual effects and just generally effects.
Yeah.
So. Well, we appreciate it. That's nice.
Yeah. Great.
You're doing a great job on yourself as well. On Turn, can't wait for the new season.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. It won't come out until January, but and then we did some work on Black Sails, which is also coming out in January. So
yes, I've been hooked on that one too.
Really fun. I think it's sort of like the golden era, another golden era of TV. There's a lot of great shows on.
Oh yeah, for sure. So.
All right, we'll let you go, John. You probably have some stuff to blow up.
Yeah.
Some makeup, women to talk to.
All right.
Thanks, John.
Bye.
Well, that was John Massey from Fuse FX. That was a really, really interesting interview, hearing about his day-to-day work as a supervisor.
Yeah, I really learned a lot. I mean, a lot of that stuff, you kind of see the magic that happens on screen, and you know that, you know, there's people that are working on it, and you kind of assume, especially if you're in the industry or you're wanting to get into the industry, you kind of assume a lot of that stuff. But until you actually talk to somebody and hear what they do day-to-day, you don't know.
Yeah, right? It's really beneficial for someone who's, you know, thinking about getting into that profession to know that there are times when you just sit there.
Yeah.
You have to find something to do. That's important to know. And it's things that most people don't really consider, I think, when choosing a career. And it's not, you know, that might be a downside, but you also hear about those sort of manic moments, too, where you're having to scramble and when he was talking about where he sort of, the director sort of turned everything over to him.
Yeah, yeah.
I was sort of, imagining John like Cecil B. DeMille with those boots and those pants and the bullhorn going, all right. No, I'm sure he's not that. But that's interesting. I never considered that. And so he's telling the DP what to do, the cameraman, how to move the camera and frame the shots. And that's interesting.
Yeah, I think even, you know, you're talking about the times where you don't have anything to do. I think even the way, you know, he handled that of, even if there may not be anything to do, you still have to pay attention. You still have to do this. And that really kind of speaks to the type of person that John is.
Yeah.
But also the type of person that it takes to be a VFX supervisor of, you're not just going to sit there and twiddle your thumbs or that kind of thing. You're looking for ways, you're there for a purpose, right? And so you're looking for ways to fulfill that purpose, to be able to, when you get back to actually work on it, you have everything that you need.
Right. Yeah. And the work between, you know, like an in-house supervisor and an on-set one, I think that distinction is really important to make also when you're considering a career.
Sure.
Because different personalities are going to like that. You could tell he could, you know, he liked being outside.
Yeah. Blowing stuff up.
up. And so, but, you know, some people don't. They don't like to go, you know, travel or whatever. Sure. They'd rather stay there with the crew and sort of manage them in a more confined environment or predictable environment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something to consider on your path, on your career path and where you want to go, especially starting out.
Yeah.
It's good information to know.
Yeah, definitely. Because in the end, you want to do what you love to do. And if you're on set and you hate being on set, you know, it's not something you want to do.
His cinematography background, I think, was really telling as to his success as a VFX supervisor, too. Because as he pointed out, you know, the reason that the director can say, take this, John, is because he knows pretty much everything. He knows the language that the grip knows, right?
Yeah.
To say, I need this, this, and this. He's handled those things. He knows what they are.
Knows what lenses you need and all that kind of. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And for someone who doesn't have that background, it must get, you know, kind of frustrating at times for both sides. Instead of saying, I need that pointy thing or that. I need the lens that does this or whatever. So that must be really, really facilitating on set.
It is. And I think it speaks to things that, you know, if you don't have that and if you want to do it on set, right, that's just something that you'll need to learn to be able to pick up, to be able to be successful in that long term. It's definitely something that is, maybe you wouldn't think about that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought about that.
Sure.
I mean, I wouldn't have thought about needing that cinematography background to be a VFX supervisor. Obviously it'd be helpful, but it, you know, after talking to John, it sounds like, you know, you need that. Like, it's a requirement. If the director's going to turn something over to you, you need to know, right? Mm-hmm. You need to know how this is. And that's something that I learned. I mean, hopefully you guys learned something from this as well.
If you've got any questions, comments, suggestions for other episodes, or maybe you just feel enraged and want to yell at us, reach out to us at our email address, pixelhub@pluralsight.com.
Or if you want to tell the world how awesome we are, hop over to iTunes, leave a rating and review that will make us proud. Thanks for listening.